history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are a few things we all have in common. One, we know that our freedom is not free. It is bought and paid for by those men and women in uniform who are willing to risk it all. And we also know that really, no matter where you are, there are some incredible stories just waiting to be told. It might be your next door neighbor, maybe one of your parents or grandparents, but we're just never going to know unless we take the initiative to ask a few questions and take the time to listen. That's what I've had the privilege of doing for well over a decade now, and I can't imagine my life without the perspective I've gained from these incredible Americans. The idea here is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget that price has been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we end up not only educated, but entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. It is, of course, Memorial Day weekend, and you could say that almost every episode is a Memorial Day episode when we hear from these World War II veterans about the friends they lost in combat. We're going to hear some of that today, but there's going to be a little different twist as well. First, let's talk about what Memorial Day is and what it isn't, because inevitably there's some confusion. Veterans Day in November honors all of those who have served, but the roots of Memorial Day go back to the Civil War and what was then called Decoration Day, a chance to decorate the graves of men who had died in uniform. The term Memorial Day was first used in 1882. It was observed on May 30th until 1971, when a new federal law moved it to the final Monday of May each year to enable a three-day weekend. Memorial Day is quite simply a day to remember the more than 1 million Americans dating back to the War for Independence who have given what President Lincoln called their last full measure of devotion to secure and preserve our freedom. It's a day to support those Gold Star families who have lost a son or daughter in the service by letting them know that that supreme sacrifice will never be forgotten. Many of the veterans we've met here over the years were part of Gold Star families themselves. They lost fathers, brothers, even sons to war. And if you can bear with me for just a minute in order to demonstrate how this is an issue that can touch so many of us and we're more connected to it than we probably think, I'd like to share how this program you're listening to, that some of you have been listening to for over a decade, can be traced back to one Gold Star family in the Midwest a century ago. My inspiration in this effort has always been my grandfather, Dr. Robert Leffler. He was a battalion surgeon attached to the 6th Armored Division in World War II. He happened to be the ranking medical officer at the liberation of the Buchenwald concentration camp. That was after he was awarded a Bronze Star during the Battle of the Bulge, and that was after he was recognized with the Silver Star for an incident near Pont-Orson, France, where he and his Jeep driver continued to go back into the line of fire to rescue men from burning tanks and half-tracks. He was one of the very first veterans I interviewed all those years ago, and I asked him what was going through his mind during that ordeal in which he saved 26 men.
I was pretty sure I was going to get killed.
Well, I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, you wouldn't be around.
That response has stuck with me all these years, a sobering reminder that I would have never been born. That has implications for so many families with parallel stories, and it also has implications for those Gold Star families we should all keep in our prayers this weekend. What kind of lives would these fallen heroes have lived? What kind of impact would they have had? And how many descendants of theirs might have been world changers in their own right? And shouldn't that really motivate the rest of us to live in such a way that the value of freedom matches the price that was paid for it? And you know, that was where my grandfather's motivation came from. He had grown up hearing stories of his uncle, Vincent Duscheck, a brilliant University of Illinois engineering graduate from Wisconsin who was one of the first American military pilots ever. He flew de Havilland DH-4s in combat in Europe for over a year and even trained other fledgling pilots there in World War I. But on October 16, 1918, 26 days before the armistice to end World War I would be signed, whether he was shot down or it was some kind of accident is not clear, but that 23-year-old pioneering pilot was killed as his plane came down in a fiery crash in France. My grandfather was just 2 years old when that happened, but his uncle's story inspired him to join the Army before World War II. And as I said, it was his service that motivated me to try to preserve these stories and encourage others to do the same. In October, we will mark 100 years since my great-great-uncle Vincent Dushek made that ultimate sacrifice. But I have a little different idea for the rest of our time together today. I was thinking about some of the veterans who've left us over the last year since last Memorial Day, and that this would be an appropriate time to honor and remember their legacies. In listening back over some of their stories, it struck me how almost every single one of them shared about the brave Americans they knew in the war who never had the chance to come home. We're going to start with Al Skerritt, who passed away October 4th at the age of 97. That was less than a week after his interview aired here on Hometown Heroes, when he explained some of what he went through on the aircraft carrier USS Bunker Hill on May 11th, 1945, when more than 400 of his shipmates were killed in action.
We shot down one kamikaze and the other two hit the ship. I knew where they had hit because I could hear on my earphones what happened. Oh, I heard this pounding on this escape hatch, and it was from the engine room, and I opened up the escape hatch, and here there was a sailor. He was rum-dumb, and he wanted to get out, and I tried to help him out, but he was too heavy, and so I saw another sailor walking by, and I asked him to come over and help me, and he helped me get this guy out of this escape hatch. And this sailor told me, he says, you know, he says, there's a first aid station now in the forward part of the ship. I could take this guy up there. And I said, oh, please do. And I gave this guy to take up to the first aid station.
Did you ever in all those years think back to that guy you'd pulled out of the engine room on the Bunker Hill and wonder what happened to him?
Of course I thought about that, but it would only be a moment thought. It was really surprising when I got that phone call here at the house.
So about a decade ago, you talked to a writer, Max Kennedy, son of Robert F. Kennedy, who was writing a book about the Bunker Hill and that tragedy. So your story's in that book.
Yes.
And unbeknownst to you, there's a gentleman in Chicago reading that book.
Yeah, well, he called me. And he told me that I was the guy that pulled him out of the hole. He says he didn't know. He always wondered who I was. It was surprising. I feel real good that I know the guy that I saved. I really did save him. But I was young and I was strong and I wasn't emotional like I am now. I feel like I'm still on a mission. Maybe my mission is just to show gratitude and also to tell my story. I even think it's quite a story. Yeah.
When you think about all those sailors on your ship that died in that attack, how should we remember them now? What's their legacy? What do we need to know about them or remember about them?
I think it would be good to show pictures of that time, to know about them, how they buried them at sea and all that. And I really feel like they should see some of those scenes where they bury them at sea.
You think by seeing scenes like that, we'll have a better understanding or appreciation of the price that was paid for our freedom?
Oh, definitely. If you kind of see that sacrifice that they gave, you appreciate things more.
If that doesn't underscore the real meaning of Memorial Day, I don't know what does. 8 days after Al Skerritt passed away, we also lost Leon Christensen at the age of 93. Leon served on the battleship USS Texas, which was shelling German positions overlooking Omaha Beach early in the morning of June 6, 1944. He also survived some close calls a couple weeks later.
And all of a sudden, the Germans all came to life. I was sitting on the deck at the time. I went up on top. All of a sudden, we heard these splashes in the water, and we knew we were being shelled, so we got to our battle station. They sounded battle stations. We took two hits, one on the conning tower, which we lost a man there, and wounded several. The shell hit just below one of the decks, and my friend, his name was Christensen, got killed on that one. And then a while later, we took another shell, went through the hull of our ship, and landed in a compartment right close to where I was. We didn't know about it, and it didn't explode.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dud. Had it exploded, I probably wouldn't be talking to you today.
Yeah. And in fact, you can see that unexploded shell, and I think maybe your son did when he visited the USS Texas. Mm-hmm. It's on display. Where else but the Lone Star State? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this. Just to clarify for people, this is a couple weeks after D-Day, almost 3 weeks after. And while I mentioned D-Day, so much has been written about June 6th, and there were so many elements of it. You've got the planes overhead, the paratroopers and gliders behind enemy lines, the guys who were hitting the shore, and obviously all of you on over 700 ships between the Americans and the British that morning. But the moniker that has stuck is the longest day.
Mm-hmm.
Did it feel that way to you?
Yeah, I guess it did in a way. Again, I'm just a young kid yet. I didn't take anything as serious as an older person might have. I wasn't scared.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't scared. I don't know how to explain how I felt.
But on that day, there wasn't a whole lot of damage on your ship.
No.
But here you are, no damage, which is pretty incredible considering where you were and what was going on. But here you get a couple weeks later at Cherbourg, and the Germans are hitting your ship. And you mentioned that the first casualty, the first to die on your ship, was named Christensen, mm-hmm. Kristen Christensen.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually knew him? You
guys, very well, yes.
Because of the common surname? Is that what brought you together?
No, I could be.
Yeah?
Could be. We met each other. We weren't close buddies or anything, but acquaintances.
Well, and so often I talk to veterans, and they all have moments where, you know, it could have been me. Maybe mm-hmm. I wouldn't have come home, and you just described them for me. But it seems to me that when one of the guys on your ship dies, it's a friend of yours, and he has the same name as you, how do you not feel like that could have been me?
It really hurt.
Uh-huh. Was there anything that helped you deal with that?
Well, as working with the corpsman, I had to go up and help get him down, and a couple of the wounded from this deck that had been blown up. So the shell hit just below and it exploded up, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it snapped his legs off, bled to death. He got taken down, but he never recovered. But the feeling was terrible to see a friend like that. But it would have been the same, I think, for anybody to see one of your buddies go down. And, you know, as I get older, I think more about it than I did when I was young. I didn't even want to talk about it that much. But now these memories are all very vivid. As if I was just there right now, it's a feeling that you never forget, I guess.
He never did forget, and we won't forget him. That was the late Leon Christensen. You can link to his full interview, as you can for all of the vets we'll remember today, at hometownheroesradio.com. And this special Memorial Day edition will return right after this.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. Nearly 1,000 veterans have gotten to see their memorials for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.